I'd like to open the meeting of the House Task Force on ONC Counties. Thank you very much for being with us today. Some very, very important issues that we get to discuss. So we're going to have an informational meeting to review legislation relating to temporary state control of county and municipal governments. It's unfortunate that we have to look at this, but we do, and it's important. So right now I'll open the informational hearing on House Bill 2206, and I'll call up the first panel, which is Stephen Trout, Director of Elections with the Secretary of State, and John Phillips, Legislative Coordinator for the Department of Revenue. And whoever would like to start first, you're more than welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Phillips of the Office of the COO. I also work for the Revenue Department, so that can be confusing to everyone, sometimes me included. But what we're here today to do is to talk about House Bill 2206, and that is a bill that would provides four different solutions and authority for state agencies and entities to be involved in county functions to the extent it's necessary in the case of a fiscal emergency. And those four areas are in the areas of elections, and building codes, and inspections, county property tax assessment and collection, and finally the Veterans Service Officers. So we have people from all four of those agencies and entities here today. The bill is in the Rules Committee, and we think it's ready for a hearing. So we have a -2 amendment that we've had some discussion over with a lot of the affected interested parties, and we think it's ready to go. So we'd like to talk about that today.
And I forgot to ask if anybody had opening comments, so if you'll just wait one moment. Did you have some opening comments? Sorry.
It's okay. I was going to read through this for the record just so that we said it out loud what the bill actually did, and specifically for those people who are just a little watching from the outside. I don't know if you want, but I have a little recap. House Bill 2206 allows governing bodies to seek help from state, other through the governor's office, in the following areas of critical county services: the county elections, where the Secretary of State will provide service to ensure adequate elections and reimbursement via e-board; the county appraisal and assessment via DOR; the building code inspection via DCBS, and it talks about the 2-year time period. Specifies that repayment, one, is through the CAFA grants, two, state shared, and three, through e-board. So there are some provisions of this that allow county government to participate and also share in the cost. I know we'll hear more from our panel, but I wanted to say that out on the record so that everyone knew really where we're starting from.
Thank you so much.
So with my other hat on, I'll talk about the property tax collection and assessment function, and that is the idea there is that all local governments depend on the county tax collector and assessor to assess and collect property taxes, which is then distributed to all of the local governments in the county. And those are critical functions. Cities depend on it, and all the special districts depend on it, and the county itself depends on it. So if that function were not able to be completed due to lack of staff or whatever the fiscal emergency is, then this bill actually gives authority to the Department of Revenue under the circumstances described by Representative Hanna, where the county requests that the governor make a declaration. The governor makes a decision on whether to declare an emergency or not, and if he does, or she at the time, whenever that happens to be, then the director of the Department of Revenue would work with the county in working out how that transition would work and how we could help. There was concerns about how that might be funded, but as was said, there's a CAFA grant which provides a certain amount of money for counties to perform this function. There's also some state shared revenues, three sources that could be used that are undedicated and could be used for that function. And then also in that section, it provides for the department to go to the emergency board in case there's expenditures over and above the amounts available. I'd be happy to answer any questions about that part if you have any, or we could go on to elections.
Questions, comments?
Great.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Co-Chair. We'd had some discussion, and it may have been in other bills or just a general discussion about giving authority for the state, whether it's Department of Revenue or whoever, to impose an additional tax or an income tax. That's not any of this, right? Or is it in this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Freeman, that is not part of this. There's
okay.
another bill, I think, that's also on your schedule for this morning that okay. might address that.
But this, make sure I'm getting this clear. This one, there's no avenue for that to occur at all within the bill we're discussing now.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? All you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director, and thanks for inviting me here to speak on House Bill 2206, which really provides an emergency backup in the case of any counties that aren't able to fulfill their election functions. And so, we've worked with counties and with the COO's office to come up with a plan that, was laid out by Representative Hanna that would allow us to coordinate with the governing body to determine whether elections can be run adequately, and if not, then the governing body can reach out to the governor, who will consult with the Secretary of State, and then we can determine whether we agree that there is that emergency and a county election emergency should be declared, and then we can step in and work with the counties to make sure that the voters of those affected counties will have adequate election resources to be able to make the elections go forward. And we looked for some other funding sources, but really couldn't find any that we felt were out there to help us there. So we thought the best thing to do would be to come back before the e-board for any costs that would be associated with that. And one of the other things that we wanted to make sure was there was a way to get out of that emergency. And so the same way that you get into the declaration of the emergency is the same way to get out. Either the governing body can ask to say we no longer have an emergency, at which the governor and the secretary will review that, or if upon our review from the secretary's office, it appears that there really isn't any emergency that's impacting the elections, and we feel that the counties have the resources to take care of that, then we can release that requirement and put the burden back on the county. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you. I don't mean to monopolize the
no,
time, but
please,
I appreciate
this
it.
Is your time.
So I want to make sure I heard that right. So if there's a situation where a county government says, hey, we're in trouble, and they ask the elections division and the governor's office for help, you all review that, and you'll, if it's needed, you'll help. And then if there's a time past that the county says, hey, we're good now, we're good to go, can they opt out without your permission, or does it require you all to say okay to opting out?
Right. So, Madam Chair, Representative Freeman, so the process would be that under either of those situations, either we could initiate it or the county could initiate that an emergency no longer exists, but at that point the governor would have the final decision on whether the emergency remains or not, in consultation with the secretary. So this, the same review process that there is to establish the county election emergency would be in place to remove that emergency status.
Yep,
just real quick, I think I heard it right. So a county has to ask for permission to get in, and it has to ask for permission to get out.
Madam Chair, Representative Freeman, yes.
Great, thank you.
Anybody else, questions or comments? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then we'll call our second panel, Mark Long, Administrator of Oregon Building Codes Division at DCBS, and Tom Mann, Administrator of Veteran Services for ODVA.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of Building Codes. I'm going to give you just a quick overview about what we do and how the bill impacts us. We're in Section 4 of House Bill 2206, just to get everybody on the same page. Just to refresh the committee, we set statewide standards for building construction in Oregon. The standards that we set through our boards and with our industries are statewide. So the code is carried out through our office in 130 city and county programs. It is a statewide program. Counties and cities choose to run those programs if they want to, and there's currently a four-year cycle to kind of re-up the desire to continue to run those programs. The building departments are fee-supported at the state and local government. They're paid by permit revenues, paid by the contractors. The funds that are used locally and at the state are dedicated for those building department activities, so we're not in the general fund space or any of the other issues. Local governments use dedicated or state-licensed staff that we set standards for, and the programs have to meet a certain set of safety standards that we have the ability to audit and oversee. There are basically three reasons why counties primarily are struggling right now, and I've just got a little map that I want to show you. Over the last 5 years, I've got 20 counties. These are the orange areas of the state that have over a 40% decline in their building department revenue. That creates a significant, hopefully everybody can see this, that creates a significant hardship on those counties. When you get into some of the areas where we're seeing the big struggle is in the kind of the four corners of the state. Even the green areas are a 1 to 40% decline. We've only had one area that's had an increase in the last 5 years, and that's because a hospital project went into a small community. It just kind of changes things around. But in these four areas of the state, we've had quite a bit of an interest about how we can help stabilize these programs. This isn't a question of whether I need authority. It's a flexibility to respond when those programs are struggling because of economic condition, because they have difficulty getting staff or maintaining staff, because they're licensed staff, the availability is difficult, or in some areas we have county programs that are subsidizing their building departments with general fund dollars, and so then when you get into the ONC type of area, the ONC counties, that creates an additional struggle. I came before a similar committee like this over a year ago when one of the counties had called us up 1 week and said we were going to be doing the building inspections the next week. I couldn't respond very quickly to that. We're not set up to do that. So this bill is designed to allow us to combine resources with the local building departments between state and local government. Again, these are dedicated fees to jump in and set up shop quite quickly so that we don't create a situation where the builders in the local area or the economy is hampered between a transition between the state and I. I just want to let the committee also know I'm working on this set of issues in about three other bills throughout the building that look at how can we have greater flexibility at my level to get in, respond quickly to the needs of a county through partnership agreements, combining resources, and making sure that we don't create a situation where contractors' projects are held up because of a service delivery problem. With that, I'll be happy to take any questions that you have.
Any questions? Yes, Representative McKeown.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hoyle. It begs a question. It looked like a little kind of a tan sore thumb down in the southwest corner. What makes that one stand out?
Chair Hoyle, Representative McKeown. Yeah, I mean, it's really the four corners. Just as a matter of fact, later today I'm going to be traveling to Malheur County to talk to Harney County, Malheur County, and the City of Ontario, where there's three building departments in this very large geographic area that are struggling to keep staff and maintain services. And we're going to begin the discussion about what it would look like for the state to come in and help out, whether that's providing technology support, management support, facility support, information support, variety of different areas. And that's really where we see the future of making these programs work.
Follow up?
Yes.
Thank you. Why is Coos County tan and the other ones are orange and green?
Oh, I'm sorry. Chair Hoyle, that's because there was in Coos County, we actually provide the service delivery in Coos County. We provide it in Coos County and Umatilla County. Everywhere else is carried out by local government. There was a hospital project that went in the city of Coos Bay, and when you're in a small community that operates on a tight budget, a large commercial project can turn the numbers over. Comparatively, when you're looking at average growth over not much activity, and then all of a sudden a lot of activity, can skew the numbers.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Co-Chair Hannah?
I'm working through a little issue here, and if you'll give me a moment, I do have a comment.
For a moment?
Yes.
Okay, absolutely. Just stand at ease for a moment. Okay. All right. Tom, if you'd just like to start, we can...
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm the administrator of the Veterans Services Division at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. That division is responsible for all veteran programs. That includes the County Veterans Service Office. Our situation is a little different. Under state statute, the 406 and 408 statutes, the state is responsible for all veteran services. Counties may opt in and have a county veteran service officer, but it's not a mandated program. 34 of 36 counties in the state do have a county veteran service officer. Marion and Polk counties opted out. They did not decide to have a county veteran service officer, and we at ODVA provide those services for Marion and Polk County. The other 34 counties, however, have a variety of different methods of having a service officer. Some are county employees, maybe one, maybe a large office like Washington County or Multnomah. Some contract the service, like in Columbia County. They contract with the local community action team. In Benton County, they contract with the local COG, a Council of Governments. So there's a lot of different models of how we provide services. What happens is the agency gets about $7 million of general fund biennium. We pass through directly about $3.5 million, actually a little over that. They get about 52% of our general fund, direct pass through to the counties to partner with the counties to provide veteran services. And what that looks like are accredited veteran service officers who file claims on behalf of veterans, their families, their dependents, and survivors to ensure they get their veteran benefits and also provide a variety of other services locally so they don't always have to come to the state for those services. When we were looking at this bill and why we were invited to participate was Curry County, Josephine County, perhaps Douglas County. We're looking at how do we fund veteran services when we're in this bind because the counties have to have a matching amount, and that comes from their general fund. So they're saying, do we fund the assistant deputy district attorney or do we fund the county veteran service officer? And they look at the statute and say, well, we don't have to fund the service officer. And so some of these counties are making hard decisions of whether they're going to keep their service officers. Well, under statute, when that happens, the state just automatically takes over that responsibility because it is the state's responsibility. So let's say Curry County decided they were not going to have a service officer anymore. Under statute, current statute, the state would provide for that. What doesn't happen under statute is that money that was being passed through to the county, that doesn't come back to the state to provide the service. That gets distributed to the remaining counties. And we thought that was a little bit of a problem because we couldn't necessarily provide the service locally, taking it out of Hyde while taking that money that should have gone to that county and distributing it back to everybody else. So one part of this part of the ODVA part, the veterans part, says that should a county opt out that currently has a veteran service officer, the money that ODVA passes through to that county would come back to the state and can only be spent on providing services in that county. So the logical question is, Tom, what would you do? Well, a lot of options. One, I would just contract back with the service officer who's in that county to provide the service. As you probably know, these are about relationships that we have. And veterans, when they build a relationship with a service officer, it's very uncomfortable to break that relationship. So our first thought would be, why don't we just use that money and bring that person on contract or make them a state employee or however we're going to do that to keep that continuity in that county and that service continuing. The second way to do that is some of our areas do things regionally. We have counties that will have a service officer that's a circuit rider between counties, and we could contract with another county to provide the service. For example, Lake and Klamath County, they seem to exchange clients all the time. I don't know what's going on there, but Lake County people go to Klamath, Klamath people go to Lake, and so there's some continuity there. There's ways for us to provide the service through our Portland and Salem offices with our veteran service officers. So as we look at this, what we didn't want to do is box ourselves in a statute saying this is how we do it, because every place is different. Every community in this state and every service office is a little different. So what we would want to do is if a county, let's say Josephine or somebody else, decided they weren't going to do this anymore, we would want to be very specific about how we handled that based upon the needs of that county. And so I've been in hearings before where they said, well, wouldn't you just logically hire the person that's there? Maybe. Not all service officers are created equal. So we would have to look at that and see what's the best fit for the county and making sure that the best services are being delivered. So that's the first part of the bill. Then there's this little part of the bill that talks about computers. You're probably going, what in the world's that about? when we originally talked about this idea of the current statutes and what we can and can't do, Legislative Fiscal Office thought we had the authority to do some things in the current statutes regarding computer access and taking over counties that we didn't feel we really had. I thought the statutes were pretty nebulous. One of the issues happening right now, the federal VA is going to go to all electronic filing for claims. As you probably know, everything now is done by paper. If you've ever been to the VA, it's fantastic. There's piles of paper up to the ceiling, and people look like they've been beaten to death, and it's great. Well, the VA has gotten to that point where they're finally ready to do electronic filing. Everything's going to be electronic, which is fantastic. But that means everybody in the state, every CVSO, every county, and all of our state people have to be able to package a claim electronically and file it. Well, a package looks like this. You have the initial claim, you have the supporting evidence, you have documents that allow us to have what they call HIPAA, which is healthcare information accessibility. There are powers of attorneys that have to be filed. It's a legal system. And if you don't have the right software in the computer system to do that, you're not going to be able to electronically file under our power of attorney. So what the bill says is that we have the authority to make sure every county is using the same system, because at one point we had, I think, six different systems in the counties that didn't talk to each other. And so as the state, we weren't able to really wrangle that cat. Currently, we all have gotten on a system called VetraSpec. It's a cloud system that is absolutely genius. And I think all but two counties are on it. And so we're very excited that everyone's on the same page. So if one of your county veteran service officers wrote a note in the comments and said, hey, Tom, can you look at the Jones file? I can look at the Jones file and see everything they're doing. I can see every form filled out, every document uploaded, every comment made. So the idea for that part of the bill was to make sure everyone's on VetraSpec, so everyone's talking to each other, we're all communicating about the same veteran, and that when it comes time to push the button to get that file to VA, it all goes the same way instead of there being six different systems that don't communicate with each other. So that's that little piece of that bill. We're of the opinion that Curry County, so you know, is the one most in danger right now. Josephine County has the authority to go out for a levy, and they're doing that for their veteran service officer. We've not heard anything out of Douglas County, any other crises around the state. None of the other service officers have told me that they're in danger at this point. But those two counties, Josephine and Curry, are the ones we're watching most closely.
Any comments or questions from committee?
Thank you.
You bet. No, well, thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you very much.
All right, our third panel, Alex Kyler, Intergovernmental Relationship Manager for Lane County.
It is on OLIS, but physical copies would be helpful.
Good morning, task force members. I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. The reason that I had asked to be in front of you this morning is to bring up a concept that Lane County in particular has struggled with as we've dealt with our own dancing around with fiscal distress, and it has to do with medical examiner services. Last year, when we went into our budget process for fiscal year 12-13, the county administrator asked departments to cut their budgets by 25%, and in the DA's department, that led to a complete elimination of the medical examiner division in the county. As the budget process wore on, it was clear that that would lead to some significant problems in the county. If you do not have the staff that can actually declare somebody deceased, the body cannot be legally moved. And so we had a real problem that we struggled with and ultimately funded ME services through some one-time dollars. Immediately after the budget process, we came up and met with John Phillips' predecessor at the COO's office, as well as Steve Powers from the governor's office and Oregon State Police, to talk about this process that we'd been through, because it was really fairly uncomfortable and led to a lot of tough questions about how these services could be provided. we had sort of expected that there was going to be something in the governor's budget to address it. There was not. It did turn out there was a there is a Senate Bill 566 that has worked its way out of judiciary and is sitting in Ways and Means right now. That has been sort of a my understanding is a longstanding proposal by Oregon State Police to create four regions for medical examiner, plus 35 positions of death scene investigators, called legal. They're called legal, medical legal death investigators is the terminology. And that's a great bill. We supported it, but it has a very large fiscal. It fully implements over a couple of biennium, but it does have a large fiscal, and my worry is that it will not make it out of Ways and Means, frankly. We think that 2206 provides an opportunity, at least for counties like Lane, that may again look at how to fund the medical examiner division. We've got our budget just got released the other day, and the administrator proposes five cuts in the DA's office. Now, if you look at DA's offices, prosecutors are important people because they actually generate those folks who are under supervision that then Lane County gets reimbursed through the Community Corrections Act funding mechanism. And so if you're the DA, you've sort of weighing, do you employ people who can actually create a funding stream or not? And that was what led to his decision last year to fully eliminate that division. And so I think we're going to be sort of posed with that question again in Lane County. And my recommendation is that 2206 could be a good place to add this function, this division, this service, if you will, that outlines where some counties find themselves with fiscal distress. I will note on 566, especially to Representative McCune, Coos County DA did not like that bill, but also in their testimony submitted recognized as an ONC county that they could very well be in the same situation that Lane County was in last year with respect to these Emmys and death scene investigators. If the committee, if the task force is willing, I have a concept that is much like elections. The language in the elections part of this bill, where it would be a way to turn that function over. There is not a great funding mechanism, unfortunately. There is some money, state money, that the counties are reimbursed. Some counties are reimbursed for autopsy expenses. Other than that, it's a general fund sort of function.
I think when we look at critical services, medical examiner services are about as critical and specialized as you get. It's not like you can have a citizen committee that pulls together to be a medical examiner or to take care of bodies. So I think it's important. Certainly it would be something that, with my co-chair's agreement, that we would be willing to look at and make a recommendation on for the Rules Committee to consider. So we really appreciate you bringing this forward to us. Did you, Kathy?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Coach, your hand.
Yeah, I've talked to Alex about this. We got to look at it. It's another one of the
critical services.
Yes.
Yeah. And Coach Hoyle, thank you. And me too. And when it came to light that this was something that we had overlooked, it's apparent that we have a problem that we need to address. So I appreciate the co-chairs getting together to try and find a solution to this.
Coming from Lane County and having to go through this in our last budget cycle and scrambling to realize that we may not have medical examiner services, was, again, it brought it to the forefront in a way that was better to plan, but it would be great if we didn't have to plan for this at all. So
thank you,
and please bring our committee administrator have a copy of your proposal,
okay,
and then we'll look that over.
Okay. Could I just add,
sure.
Co-Chair Hoyle, Co-Chair Hannah, I think the conversation points to how different it is around the state about how counties do respond. Lane County also had some tough times with A&T that were helped out very much in the short session by passage of a bill that allowed for some dispensation there. The, you know, it's
Curry County may not find itself in a situation with respect to ME. You know, it's just a very different thing and hard to predict. And I think that, at least in Lane County's case, it was one that rose to the top. My assumption is it would rise to the top in other counties, but it's just, I think it points to the dynamism amongst counties about, well, which one is. And I know the COO's office has sort of struggled with that, is how do you get counties somewhat on an orderly page in that they can say, okay, this is the service that is going to go over to the state rather than sort of this hodgepodge mix. But unfortunately, that's the situation we're in now.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank
Any
you.
Other comments? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the informational hearing on House Bill 2206 and open the informational hearing on House Bill 3456. House Bill 53. Sorry, House Bill 3453, which allows the governor to proclaim public safety fiscal emergency with unanimous agreement of the Senate President, Minority Leader, House Speaker, and Minority Leader. By proclaiming a public safety fiscal emergency, the governor may enter into intergovernmental agreements with local governments. Counties are permitted to impose tax subject to the approval of governing bodies of each county within the area to carry out purpose of this act. The Dash 4 amendments, which were very important to all of us on this committee, requires the governor to consult with all units of local government contained within the area specified by the proclamation. So non-county local government shall be a party to the intergovernmental agreement only with their consent and requires the state to bear 50% of the cost of public safety services provided under the intergovernmental agreement. Did you want to make any comments?
Madam Co-Chair, nice opening. I'll throw in a couple of little points. I think that as we worked on this, remember 3453, public safety specifically, we had some concern about units of local government, and so that proposed amendment is a unit of local government other than a county shall be a party to intergovernmental agreement only with the consent of the unit of local government. So again, we went back and said, because there were some entities within the county who said, wait a minute, that we may or may not want to be a part of this, this is that piece. You mentioned this in those Dash 4 amendments, clarifies that the non-county local governments are, again, only subject if they agree, and specifies that the state will cover 50% and counties will cover 50%. And if you are watching and you have the bill in front of you, those who are concerned about the potential for a tax imposed, read Section 7 of the bill. Again, Madam Co-Chair, you were very specific, but Section 7, Subsection 2, a tax imposed pursuant to this section shall require the approval of the governing bodies of each county within the area. So again, it goes back to local control. It says if you have an emergency, this is a way to help protect you from that emergency, but it does give you that local control. No one's going to force this on you. It's a way to share the services back and forth specific to public safety.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that clarification. And with that, we'll call our fourth and last panel. Gil Riddell from the Association of Counties and Chris Fick from the League of Oregon Cities.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riddell, Policy Coordinator, Association of Oregon Counties. Thank you for being so involved in this issue. It is unfortunate that we have to be talking about this, and I want to assure you that the Association of Counties is working very hard and directly with Congress to see if we can't get a more permanent solution to the funding that would be directed to our huge federal neighbors in the counties, the federal forests. In terms of House Bill 3453, we affectionately at AOC call it the nuclear option. We have discussed it, and the commissioners and judges are neutral on this because we have a split in our membership. There's some unease about it, and there's some commissioners who really like it. And they like it because of the salutary effect that it may have on the local efforts to provide local services, local resources. Sort of the county's effort to pitch in. This states very clearly what the counterweight is, what the option is, if there isn't effort locally and if there isn't a response from the federal government. And so it provides a salutary effect, some of our commissioners say. So we are, AOC as an organization is neutral.
Any questions or comments? Okay, Mr. Fick.
Good morning, co-chairs, other members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Fick with the League of Oregon Cities. Our members are obviously very concerned about the plight of counties. Counties provide a number of vital services, not only for all Oregonians, but for cities as well. As they struggle financially and as they cut services, that directly translates into problems and challenges that trickle down to the local level and that our cities are facing. So I wanted to take this opportunity to share with you some of their stories before talking specifically about the two bills that have been discussed earlier. There are five incorporated cities in Curry and Josephine. I'm going to focus on Curry and Josephine counties because those two, in addition to Lane, seem to be the closest to the precipice, if you will. So there are five incorporated cities in Curry and Josephine County, Brookings, Gold Beach, Port Orford, Grants Pass, and Cave Junction. All report being fiscally prudent and very conservative when managing their finances, but all obviously report that economic struggles down there continue to be severe. For instance, a new home hasn't been built in Cave Junction in 4 years, and the city's budget is going to be 16% smaller than it was 4 years ago. The revenue is expected to continue to go down further as a result of the region's largest employer, the Rough and Ready Mill, which you guys heard about last week. In Gold Beach, the city hasn't issued a building permit or sold a new water or sewer connection in 3 years. And in Port Orford, they've only issued a handful of permits. Port Orford has also seen property tax revenues outright decline, and they've issued a furlough day a month to help balance their budget. In Brookings, the only building permit that have been issued are for remodels and for a HUD-funded apartment complex. On the public safety front, most cities unfortunately report that mutual aid is no longer mutual, and while the cities are still willing to respond to calls outside of their jurisdictions and feel morally obligated to do so, the city managers that I spoke to said that it's just a matter of time before there's an incident that police or officers are responding to outside of the city when another occurs inside the city, and the residents are no longer going to have the tolerance to pay for services that people outside of the city are receiving. They're looking into solutions to these potential problems. Gold Beach is exploring the option of creating a law enforcement district or a pay-for-service model that can enable the city to recoup some of the costs for responding to incidents outside of their jurisdiction. They also explored the option of annexation, but were surprised to learn that Curry County cut its GIS program completely, which is necessary for annexation. The city is exploring hiring GIS consultants to proceed with potential annexation, but that's a cost shift that has been now shouldered by the city at additional time and expense. Brookings, in response to county sheriff cutbacks, has been forced to add a police officer. They used to only have one police officer during certain shifts, but cutbacks at the county level has dictated that if they want to have backup response, that they have two officers on duty at all times, and they feel that that's the right thing to do for their officers. So it's, again, another shift at the city level. Gold Beach is also concerned, that's the county seat in Curry County, about the number of jail beds. Since the county jail beds and the courthouse are in the city reports an explosion of transients in the past 12 months, most camping out on the beach. Several weeks ago, there was a fire that burned over 2 acres of the beach that was caused at a transient campsite. The fire starter had been arrested earlier in the day, but had been released from the jail. In Gold Beach, there are also concerns about security at the courthouse. While the sheriff's office is attached to the courthouse, there are oftentimes not enough sheriffs in that building to respond to incidents appropriately, so the city, more often than not, is the first responder to that county building. The county's lack of mental health services, this is not unique to Curry and Josephine County, but police officers down there report responding a lot more to issues of mental health, and they are not equipped or prepared to respond appropriately to a lot of those disturbances that occur at libraries, small businesses, and grocery stores, but they are more often than not the first responders and are concerned that it's just a matter of time before an unfortunate incident occurs. Our cities also report that city fire departments and local fire districts, rural fire districts, are now providing more and more of the services at vehicle crashes. and medical calls that used to be provided by the sheriff. Those fire departments and districts are now providing traffic control almost exclusively. While these impacts are considerable, they're going to pale in comparison to what happens if counties can't provide those other services, like housing inmates, like performing assessment taxation, and like offering nominal sheriff patrols elsewhere. So we're very concerned about the impacts. That's why we're very appreciative of the work that's been done around House Bills 22 and 3453. Very appreciative of the work that Co-Chair Hoyle and Co-Chair Hanna, you and your staff have done on the amendments to these bills. We are supportive of the Dash 4 amendments to 3453 and the Dash 1 and 2 amendments to 2206. From our members' perspective, this is a crisis that's long deserved more attention than it's getting. So we're very appreciative of the work that this committee is doing towards that end. One more thing I'll submit for the record, and I'll get it to the committee administrator. It's a story that came out in that was published last night in the Curry Coastal Pilot. I frankly can't do it justice about some of the incidents that are occurring in Curry and Josephine County. So I'll let you all read it for yourselves, but I highly encourage you to do so. It just talks about what the lack of services, the impact it's having on first responders and the citizens down there who are more often than not on their own when it comes to public safety. So highly encourage you to read that, and thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Unfortunately, there really is not a lot to say, and thank you so much. Thank you for the support, and we've worked hard to balance needs of local control with providing for the ability for the state to step in, and it is a balance where you want to allow for a county to step in and ask for help when they need it, not make it too easy, but certainly not make it so difficult so that counties go further than they have to before we step in and take over critical services. I think we all agree that if we could get people back to work, that we could pay for these services. And so we appreciate your efforts at the federal level, Mr. Riddell, in ensuring we can have stable funding and also allow us to harvest timber, to create the jobs that can pay income taxes, that pay for these services. So thank you so much, and appreciate it.
Chair Hoyle, thank you. I'm not seeing the proposed amendments in OLIS. Is there a chance those could, am I looking in the wrong place?
If you go to our committee and then the meeting
materials right there.
May 1st, it's under the
I think I went in a different way. Let me go in a different way.
So any other comments today on legislating relating to temporary state control of county municipal governments? Yes.
Madam Chair, Co-Chair,
thank you.
I'll have to read the news report from Curry County, but it is, I think, Section 7, the proposed Section 7 of House Bill 3453, which is going to garner the interest of most residents regarding a surtax to pay for what I guess is 50% of the services that the state would, so the state would be paying 50%, locals would be paying 50%. And one wonders whether that's even a good enough deal for a county. But it does seem like the framework's a good start, but I know that, you know, at a certain point, people leave and it makes the problem worse. So that even the structure of the taxation, which is, I know, delicate in how it's being put together, doesn't lend confidence to me that it has a long-term solution other than the state eventually having to pay more and more. And these counties are perhaps an ominous sign, because the timber payments being in decline have emphasized the problem. But when you look at the federal government in its budget and the other transfers that come to all of our counties, is this a pattern that is going to spread? And you know, I think there has to be a somber look at, as your statement that said we could all agree jobs would, certainly jobs bring in more taxable income, but the disheartening factor is it seems that not everyone is appreciating that, you know, the emergency is here. And so we find in this legislative session perhaps legislation that, while well-intentioned, continues to make it more difficult for people to employ other people, make it more difficult to use natural resources in a responsible way. But those emergencies haven't hit the shores of their counties. And so I wonder if this is the right structure or what needs to be done to help the rest of Oregon appreciate the crisis that is here. But when we have a surtax, albeit approved by a governing body, on income, already you have people who are contributors and are going to be looking at, I'm not getting services, I'm now being hit with the surtax. At what point does it become a self-fulfilling prophecy of the spiral downward? But there's obviously no good solutions. Maybe, you know, this is what we have to do. But I can just tell you, I'm just troubled because, you know, when we hear about Cape Junction, then we hear about all the jobs. I'm just thinking how many people are going to be able to pay even 50% via a surtax in Cape Junction. So it's just, it's very discouraging because if you look ahead on what could come out of the federal government's budget and the amount of federal money that's pushed to the states, if you just look, take certain areas and say, well, what if that went away, like the timber payments, or what if this went away and this went away, and then pretty soon this sort of systemic inability to serve at the level the public has come accustomed to, that spreads and it cascades. And I don't think that's that this situation is limited to the timber counties. And maybe it has to hit some of the urban areas before Oregon realizes we have a systemic poverty problem that comes with a state that's chosen a path as to jobs that has done a disservice. And so I say that more to tell you why I am incredibly hesitant to support 3453. At the same time, I think everyone is realizes that perfection is the enemy of good, and we got to do something good.
Yeah, thank you, Representative, for highlighting those issues. And certainly, if you have an alternative proposal, we'd be happy to look at it. And
I'm sure you would.
There is no good solution. And again, it's that balance with local control and also not having a straight bailout. But at the end of the day, the reason that we have this task force and we have people in a bipartisan committee from counties that are severely affected is that our job is to go back and communicate with our colleagues who do not come from timber-dependent counties what the situation is. And I think that we've certainly worked at that as much as possible. And I think that we need an Oregon solution, and the Oregon solution is to allow us to have more control of our lands and be able to get our people back to work in the timber industry or what other industries we can find. And we need an all-state solution, not just a timber county solution, although, again, highlighting the emergency that we're facing and the cliff that we're facing is critical, because you're right. If you're not living in a timber-dependent county, you certainly don't understand what that crisis means. So I am hopeful that working with our Senate counterparts,
working with this task force. I really appreciate everybody that's here, and also, you know, hopefully getting legislation through the Rules Committee. And again, any ideas that anyone has to do it better, we'd be happy to hear it. We shouldn't be in the position that we're in, but we are. So we've just got to figure out the best way out. And again, I think you and I would both agree the best way out would be to get people back to work so they can be paying income taxes, which, again, would help fund those critical services. But, again, thank you. You're right. Appreciate your highlighting those issues. Any other comments? Mm-hmm. All right. With that, we'll close the...